Cody and a defensive lineman who'd recovered a fumble. Indy had mentioned seeing Michael at the gym this morning, and I had a feeling that she had filled him in a little, enough to make sure I didn't have to interview Brody. I was grateful for the reprieve. I picked two of the less exciting players, careful to also stay away from Colin, who happened to have had the best game of his career. It meant the lines for my interviews would be the shortest. I tried to avoid stealing glances at Brody, but my eyes didn't follow my brain's direction. He was wearing his signature towel wrapped around his waist, but his cocky smile was nowhere to be found. At one point, Nick, Michael, and I were standing in the open center of the locker room, and my eyes locked with Brody's. He was between interviews and waiting for Angie Snow and her cameraman to finish setting up to film. A pang of jealousy hit me. Angie was gorgeous, young, blonde, curvy, and very touchy-feely. She said something to him and reached out to touch his arm, and I had to look away. But like a bad car accident, I went back for more gore. Brody's eyes flitted back and forth between Angie and me as he spoke to her while her cameraman tinkered with his equipment. I was so preoccupied with watching the two of them, I didn't realize Michael had asked me a question and was waiting for a response.
"Delilah?"
"Hmm?"
I turned to Michael.
He furrowed his brow, then leaned into me and whispered,
"We can handle this if you need to take a break."
I assured him I was fine and just a little overwhelmed by the craziness of my first playoff locker room trip. When Michael had leaned down to me, his hand had gone to the small of my back. I hadn't even realized it was still there until I saw the look on Brody's face. His eyes were burning into where Michael was touching me. He looked furious, about to blow. I must have looked like a deer in the headlights when his eyes lifted to meet mine. Angie's cameraman said something, and Brody's attention was forced back to the impending interview. Just as the light flashed on Brody and the cameraman lifted his camera into position, Brody glanced over at me one more time. It was the exact same minute Michael leaned in again to say something. I grimaced as I watched Brody's face shift from angry to an evil smile. He turned his focus back to Angie, and she shot her first question off. His response played out in slow motion for me. He grinned wide, then his hand slowly went to the knot at his towel, and he gave it a little tug. It fell to the ground. I didn't stick around to watch the rest. I already knew what came next. And my guess was that Angie wouldn't put up half the fight that I had. Delilah, Chapter 39. January 15th. Drew would have been 26 today. This was the first year that I wouldn't be spending his birthday with his family. Mr. Martin had retired a few months back and had finally convinced Mrs. Martin to move to Atlanta, where Drew's sister already lived. I was happy for them, but when they packed, it meant they had to pack up Drew's things. Even last year, 6 years after Drew died, his room had been untouched when I went over to celebrate his birthday. The car ride out to the cemetery was long. I was alone with my thoughts and tried to recall memories of the good times Drew and I shared. Homecoming, senior year in high school. I smiled. Some of the guys from the team had booked a few hotel rooms, and we all went back after the game. That first time Brody kissed me in his hotel room, it hit me so hard. I wouldn't have been able to stand if he wasn't holding me so tight. I forced Brody from my head. Again. It was becoming a full-time job lately. A plane from the nearby airport was flying low overhead in front of me. I remembered back to when Drew and I flew to Alabama to meet the football coach of the college he was planning on attending. It was my first flight, and my nerves were on edge. Drew had held my hand and calmed me by telling dirty jokes. Brody took my breath away on the plane with a kiss and tried to stick his hand up my skirt under the blanket. I switched on the radio station. It only jumbled my mind more. Pulling up to the cemetery, my phone buzzed, so I put it on speakerphone and sat in my car to talk. "Hi, Mrs. Martin. How many times do I have to tell you to call me Jana, dear?" I smiled. "Hi, Jana." "That's better. How are you, sweetheart?" "I'm good. How are things in Atlanta?" "Hot." I looked at the temperature on the dashboard. 35. "Wish I could say the same." We talked for a while about the move and how they were settling into Atlanta life. Then she surprised me. "How are things between you and that handsome quarterback going?" The fight between Brody and Colin had brought my relationship with Brody into the news. I'd wondered if it had made its way to Atlanta. "We're not..." "Oh, I'm sorry, honey. I just thought... Well, I saw some pictures of the two of you, and the way you looked at him, I just thought maybe you had found someone." "The way I looked at him?" "You looked happy. I thought I saw the way you looked at Drew in your eyes. I was hopeful." I didn't know what to say. "It didn't work out." She was quiet for a long time. I thought maybe we'd been disconnected. "Mrs. Martin? Jana?" "I'm here." "Oh, I thought I lost you for a minute." "Sweetheart, I could be totally out of line, but I'm going to say this anyway. Do you remember a few weeks before the draft when you broke up with Drew? Because you wanted him to be able to focus on school and football, and he didn't want to leave you behind?" "Yes." "You cared about him so much. You wanted him to succeed and be happy, even if it meant you didn't get to be with him." "I remember. I told him I didn't want to go out with him anymore. He was pissed for about 10 minutes, then stormed back in, realizing what I was doing. He could always see right through me."
"Well, he felt the same way about you, you know."
"I know." There had never been any doubt in my mind that Drew loved me. "But do you understand what I'm saying? Drew would want you to meet someone. He would want you to move on. Be happy, fall in love, have a family someday." "Of course he would. I just haven't met anyone who could replace Drew."
"That's what I worry about, Delilah. No one has to replace Drew. He'll always have a place in your heart. But you can love two men at the same time. You just love them differently."
It wasn't lost on me that Brody had basically said the same thing.
"Thanks, Jana. Don't be afraid to love again, dear."
I spent a long time that afternoon sitting beside Drew's grave. Unlike other times I came to visit, my time wasn't spent crying. Instead, I thought about what Jana had said. Was I afraid to love again? Light snow started falling before I left. Unlike most New Yorkers, I love the winter. Hot chocolate, bright lights, warm sweaters, snow, and football. I leaned my head back, opened my mouth, and stretched my arms wide to catch the flakes as they came down. After a few minutes, I wished Drew a happy birthday and headed back to my car. Reaching the sidewalk, 100 feet from the warm confines of my Jetta, I slipped on that pretty white snow I'd just been enjoying. I wiped out, landing on my ass with both feet up in the air. For some reason, I went hysterical laughing. An elderly man walking by with his wife stopped to help me up,
but I waved them off, unable to speak through my fit of laughter. I sat there alone on the sidewalk, the snow frosting my hair white, and cackled until my laugh turned into a cry. The cry turned into a sob before I finally got up. My teeth were chattering, my lips were swollen from the bite of winter, and my body trembled. I was a mess, but for some reason, everything seemed to be clear all of a sudden. It wasn't that I was afraid to fall in love. I was pretty sure I had done that already. I was afraid that if something happened again, I wouldn't be able to get back up.
Brody, Chapter 40. Ready to go, you damn cripple? Grouper took his time getting up, his bones creaking as he lifted himself from a chair in the dining hall. He wagged his bony finger at me. You should be so lucky to be in as fine a shape as I'm in when you get to be the ripe old age of 60. 60? Who are you kidding? You have age spots older than 60. Grouper grumbled something under his breath. He lifted a box off the table. This is the last of Marlene's things. There's a nice little gold cross necklace in there and some old coins, not sure if they have any value or not. Everything else is pretty much paperwork. We donated everything to Phoenix House, like you asked. They were pretty excited to get all those clothes. More than half of them had the tags on still. You sure did spoil her. She deserved it. I took the box from Grouper and waved goodbye to Shannon at the nurse's station as we walked to the front door. That place said you'd be surprised at how many of their patients aren't young kids anymore. Drug and alcohol rehabs are more than 30% women over the age of 50. He shook his head. Would never have guessed. I didn't know the statistics, but I knew Marlene would want her stuff to go to a place where people were trying to get help. Thanks for taking care of that for me. You gonna bring the cross to Willow? I'll mail it to her. She moved upstate yesterday. Her roommate from rehab bought a place up near Saratoga, and Willow needed to get out of the city. The place she was living had too much temptation for a recovering addict. It was easier to score drugs from her neighborhood than it was to buy milk. Marlene left her a nice little chunk of change, so I'm hoping it starts her on a new life. He nodded. That's good. Marlene would be happy about that. We picked up Grouper the Third and one of his buddies on the way to Media Day. The two of them were wearing Easton jerseys and didn't shut the hell up in the back of my car the entire way to the stadium. Their excitement was contagious. They always that loud? My eyes slanted toward Grouper. He nodded. The good Lord made old people go deaf for a reason. Even arriving at Media Day 4 hours before the start, the place was mobbed. More than 2,000 members of the media from all over the world and 4,000 fans were expected to attend the day's event, which was the unofficial kickoff to the Super Bowl next week. If today turned out to be anything like previous years, the crowd on the field would resemble more of a circus than a news event. Crazy fans dressed as superheroes, women with painted bodies, and questions that were often off the wall. The league had set up extra security and a valet, with a roped-off parking area for each team. I navigated the signs to the steel entrance. Once we get inside, keep a close watch on those two. The fans can get pretty rowdy. Grouper smiled. Such a big softy under all that hard ass. Do your teammates know what a wussy you really are? Bite me, flounder. The valet sped off with my car, hitting the gas with a lead foot, and the four of us walked to the entrance through wooden police barricades. Both sides were lined with fans who had probably camped out all night. I hoisted Grouper the Third onto my shoulders and walked to the crowd lined up three deep to sign autographs. A kid about 14 or 15 had half his body leaning over the wooden barricade. I took his first, scribbling my name, then held the pad and pen up to my passenger. You want both our autographs, right? The kid nodded, even though he had no idea who the boy on my shoulder was. You sign too, little fish.
I don't know how to write my name in script.
Just fake it. That's what I do. Scribble a lot. Guppy balanced the pad on top of my head and did as I told him. The crowd got a kick out of it. We signed for 15 minutes and then went inside before I got fined for being late to the pre-event team meeting. I handed Grouper and the Guppies VIP badges to wear around their necks and fan admission tickets. Back here at 6?
You got it, boss.
Boss? Now you're talking. I grinned at Grouper. I like it. 15 minutes before the event was to start, I stood alone in a luxury box high above the swarm of people on the arena floor. I looked out through the glass window and sipped from my water bottle. Both sides of the arena were lined with booths set up for each of the starting players to sit in. Microphones dangled from wires high above the ground, and I knew from experience that crowds of reporters would soon be yelling their questions and shoving even more microphones in our faces. This was the pinnacle of what every player worked for, making it to the Super Bowl. Yet I hadn't felt like celebrating with the rest of the team after our meeting. Instead, I ducked into the first private area I could find so that I could take a few minutes to look for her. It had been 10 long days since I'd seen her face, and I would take whatever glimpse I could get. Now I knew what a fan felt like stalking a player. Part of me was still pissed at her for saying she didn't love me, but a bigger part of me didn't believe it was true. Her eyes had said something different than her lying lips. After my anger had subsided, I'd replayed the last few months over and over in my head. A wounded chick playing a mixtape that her ex made her before he dumped her had nothing on me. The only good thing was, every time I was exhausted at practice, I thought of that douchebag Langley with his hand on my girl's back. And I suddenly had a fresh burst of energy. Angry energy, but it worked at my job. Finding her in the crowd of thousands took less than a minute. I guzzled the last of my water bottle, following her with my eyes. She was wearing a black dress, a fitted red blazer, and had on high-heeled black leather boots that came up to meet the hem of her dress. Sexy as all fuck, while showing barely any skin. Suddenly she stopped walking and looked up, scanning the arena as if searching for something. When her eyes found mine, even across half a stadium, it was all the sign I needed. This shit was not over. And I was going to find out once and for all why she was pretending it was.
Delilah, Chapter 41. I'd thought about calling Brody dozens of times over the last week. Even called up his contact on my phone on more than one occasion. But each time I only ended up staring at his name. What would I say? There wasn't much that I remembered clearly from that last night in the hotel room, but the way he looked when I told him I didn't love him back was burned into my memory. It was the one thing I didn't want to remember, and yet the only thing that kept haunting me. You know that feeling you get when someone is watching you? Well, multiply the intensity of that times 1,000, and that's what made me look up. I felt it in my bones, in the acceleration of my heartbeat, in the sheen of sweat that broke out on my skin. The question was definitely not, is Brody looking at me? The only question was, where is he watching from? It didn't take me long to find out, and I couldn't look away, even when I should have. When he turned away without looking back again, it was like pouring salt on an open wound that refused to heal. Staring up at an empty luxury box, I paid no attention as I walked. The mass of people swarmed in all different directions, and I smacked straight into the back of another reporter. It had to be Angie Snow, of all people. "Delilah Maddox!" Her smile was sugary sweet, but the intonation in her tone was false. "Angie, how are you?" There were very few women in the world of men's professional sports. It wasn't like we had a club or anything, yet we all knew each other's names and faces. I'd met Angie at an event a few years back. We were both covering college games still.
"I'm good. A little disappointed, though."
"Disappointed?"
"Easton, you're a lucky girl. I thought you were done with him, and he was back on the market. I didn't realize you were still together."
I'd had my nails done that morning. The thought of getting them shaved into sharp points next time suddenly popped into my head. "We're not together anymore."
"Oh, good to know."
She smiled, and I folded my fingers into my hand, digging my nails into my skin.
"Well, good luck today."
The blonde bombshell flipped her hair and turned to walk away.
"Wait, Angie, what made you think we were still together?"
"Well,
Usually when a cowboy shows me his horse, he lets me take a ride on it. I cringed. And Brody didn't? Wrap the towel back around his waist after he intentionally let it fall. And after my interview, when I suggested he give me a private viewing of what was under the towel again, alone at my place that night, he blew me off. I breathed a little. Oh, I'm sure that doesn't happen often. One of her perfectly plucked and dyed eyebrows arched. Often? It never happens. I felt Brody come up behind me before I heard his voice. Angie's eyes rose above my head as he took my elbow into his hand. Excuse us a minute, Andy, would you? It's Angie. The next thing I knew, I was being steered out of the arena and into the hall. Brody kept moving, clutching me tightly to his side, as if I might run if given the opportunity. When we got to the entrance of the men's locker room, it was being guarded by Henry Inez. Hi. It came out just as nervous as the first time we'd met, maybe more so. He nodded. Damn, Mr. Easton. Brody scrunched up his brow. I need to use the locker room for a few minutes. Not supposed to let anyone in, even players. I sensed Brody's anxiety. We won't be but a few minutes. It's just impossible to escape all the reporters. They can be pretty annoying, I joked. Henry stepped aside, shaking his head. A few minutes, that's it. We rotate when the interviews start inside. Thanks, Henry. Brody wasted no time pushing the door open, but I stopped. How's Larissa's arm doing? The security guard smiled.
Cast comes off tomorrow. It's a good thing, too. She's threatening to take a saw to it herself to get back on the court.
That's great. Brody tugged at my arm, pulling me into the locker room. Inside, I glared at him. That was rude. I was talking.
We only have a few minutes.
I folded my arms over my chest. He grinned.
But it never took me that long to get you off.
Brody. His eyes darkened as he moved to me. With every step he took, I retreated, until my back hit a tiled wall. He lowered his face to mine, our mouths inches apart.
I think you lied.
About what? I had the immense urge to lean forward and press my lips to his. He shifted and leaned toward my neck, running his nose along the vein that pulsed with my heartbeat. It was beating out of control, and my breath was joining in on the race.
About how you feel about me. I think you lied.
He moved to my ear, his voice raw.
I think you feel everything I feel.
I said nothing, but the hitch of my breath spoke volumes.
I bet if I slipped my hand into your panties right now, you'd be as wet as I am hard.
Brody. He pulled back a few inches and cupped my face with both hands.
And it's not just your body that has a reaction to mine. I think you feel it.
He slid one hand from my chin, down my neck, and stopped when his palm covered my heart.
Here. I think you feel it here, too.
My heart was pounding under his hand.
What are you afraid of, Delilah?
He stared into my eyes, so open and vulnerable, and like a coward, I closed mine. Neither of us moved for a long time. The door to the locker room creaked open.
Easton, interviews are starting and the shift is changing. Time's up, Henry yelled,
and then the door closed again. I opened my eyes. My words were barely audible. I'm sorry. He pushed my hair back, and his thumb stroked my cheek. His smile was real, but sad.
There's nothing to be sorry about. You'll figure it out.
He let go of me and took a few steps toward the door before turning around. The cocky smile I hated to love was back now.
Oh, and Delilah, now it's your turn. You'll come around. But when you do, I think I'll make you beg for another chance.
Brody, Chapter 42. I felt like a 12-year-old boy again. In 2 days, I would play in the motherfucking Super Bowl. There would be an arena half full of women wearing my name on their backs, and here I was jerking myself off in the shower. To say I was frustrated was an understatement. When I'd told Delilah last week that the ball was in her court, I hadn't been thinking of how often I would see her. Super Bowl week was a media frenzy, and I saw her beautiful face every day. After our locker room understanding, something changed. The anger and hard feelings between us were gone. We were friendly, even, which made it exceedingly harder to keep my hands to myself. Last night, she'd been at the practice field for a coach's interview. I'd waited around like a damn puppy just to walk her to her car after she was done. When we got to her Volkswagen, she stood with her back against the door, and I knew if I had leaned in and claimed her mouth, she wouldn't have objected. I was more certain than ever that she wanted me. What I needed now was for her to be certain it was what she wanted. She needed to push past whatever was holding her back and make the decision to be with me. So I'd intentionally brought up Marlene and how Grouper had cleaned out the last of her things before I brought him and the guppies to media day. I casually mentioned that I'd mailed Marlene's cross to Willow, who now lived upstate. She had said that she believed nothing happened between Willow and me, but I needed her to know that Willow wouldn't be part of our lives going forward. That night at the hotel, after Marlene's service, Willow and I had a long talk. She admitted she had come to my suite hoping for us to get back together. As much as I hated that I hurt Delilah, the conversation between the two of us needed to happen. I needed to say goodbye to her once and for all, and she needed to hear me tell her to move on. It was a long time coming for both of us. While I wished her luck, there was no connection holding us together anymore. And I was good with that. Whatever crack of the door that I had left open for Willow, it was finally shut, once and for all. I had offered to pick Delilah up to drive her to the stadium today for the final press conference, since we were both attending, and I was shocked as shit when she agreed. She'd told me to text her when I arrived so I wouldn't have to park, but a car ride to the stadium wasn't enough time with her. So I showed up an hour before our planned departure time and rang the buzzer, pretending that she had gotten the times mixed up.
"I'm sorry, I thought you said 11.
I did.
"Nope, 10.
When she opened the door, it was obvious she had just gotten out of the shower. Her hair was wet, and she was dressed in a pair of logoed steel sweats and a pink-ribbed tank top, sans bra.
"Nice sweats."
"Nice tits. The damn things were saluting me." She stepped aside for me to enter.
"I'm not ready, but I'm fast. I can get done quick."
I quirked an eyebrow. Good thing I took care of myself not an hour ago. Delilah chuckled.
"Such a perv."
She waved toward the living room.
"Make yourself comfortable."
I watched the sway of her hips until she was out of sight, and then made myself at home. The entire place smelled like her perfume. I sat down on the couch with the remote and flicked on the TV. Every station was talking about the upcoming game. Athletes were superstitious. I didn't like to know the odds before a game, so I hit the off button and looked around. The end table held a photo album that I'd never seen before. Not thinking twice, I grabbed it and started to flip through. It was page after page of Delilah and some guy, who I could only assume was Drew. He was in a football uniform in half the pictures, and apparently Delilah didn't have to grow into her looks as many women did. She was smoking hot at every age. Most of the photos looked like they were from high school, but some looked like they might have been from college. The two of them were arm in arm in most pictures, smiling, laughing. A pang of jealousy reared from within when I flipped to one of them kissing. It was probably 8 years old, and the poor guy had been dead for almost as many years. God, I was an asshole. I put the book back on the coffee table and closed my eyes for a few minutes to clear my head. I smelled her come back into the room.
"Do you want something to drink?"
She was smiling, and then suddenly her face dropped. I followed her line of sight to the photo album. She walked to the coffee table and picked it up, storing it in the console beneath the TV.
"No, thank you," I said.
She scrunched her face.
"You asked me if I wanted something to drink. I'm good."
"Oh, yeah, right."
She paused and looked around the room.
I'll just be a few more minutes.
When she disappeared, I stared at the cabinet that Delilah had just put away the photo album in. Young love, loss, football. It was like a light bulb had turned on for the first time. My head fell back against the couch. How had I not figured it out before? Had I been hit one too many times in the fucking head at practice? I smacked myself in the skull and groaned. Jesus Christ, Brody, it's so obvious. I stood and paced back and forth for a few minutes, trying to gather my thoughts before walking into the bedroom. Hey. I leaned against the doorframe and waited for her to come out of her closet. She came out wearing a navy skirt and a white shirt, with a set of pearls that caught around one breast and hung down to her waist. Classy, yet sexy, although I preferred the pink tank top without the bra as long as it was just the two of us.
Am I taking too long?
She was carrying a pair of navy heels in her hand.
No. Can we sit?
In here?
I just want to talk a minute.
She hesitated, but then walked to the bed and sat down on the edge. I kneeled, balancing myself on one knee, and took the shoes from her hand, slipping on one at a time. She looked down at me, confused.
Thank you.
Anytime. There was so much I wanted to say, yet I wasn't quite sure of the words.
Everything okay?
She asked. Other than I'm a dumb fuck, yeah, everything is fine.
I don't understand.
Can I ask you something?
Sure.
And you'll answer?
I'll try.
Why aren't we together anymore? She closed her eyes. When she opened them again, her eyes were sad.
I don't know how to explain it.
Try. I'll listen.
Well, that night when I came to your suite and Willow was there, I was upset. Jealous, even. I hated the thought of another woman near you. But when you told me nothing happened, I believed you. I never doubted you would keep to your word and be faithful.
But you still think I have feelings for her, the same kind of feelings I have for you. She looked away.
I don't know what I think.
Look at me, Delilah. Tears welled in her eyes. You want to know what I think? I think you loved Drew the same way I loved Willow. And when you lost him, it hurt for a really long time. So much so that you were afraid to do it again. I wiped a lone tear from her cheek. This whole time I thought you were afraid to fall in love with me, that I was the problem.
It's not you.
I know that now. You're just afraid to fall.
I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry. This makes my job much easier.
Easier? How?
Changing me was going to be a lot of work, but proving to you that if you'll take a chance on me, I'll be there to catch you. Won't be as hard. Let's face it, I'm an asshole. It ain't easy to change an asshole. She laughed through her tears.
I think I just need time.
I'll be right here waiting. She wrapped her arms around my neck and hugged me for a long time. It wasn't the outcome I'd hoped for, but at least I knew I was on the right track.
Delilah, Chapter 43. 2 weeks after the Steel won the Super Bowl, life had finally begun to calm down. Brody had lived up to his promise, being there for me and letting me take my time. The only time he'd even attempted to touch me was right after he'd won the game. Everyone was celebrating on the field, and he'd managed to find me. He picked me up, swung me around in the air, and then planted a fat kiss on my lips. We both spent the next 7 days in a craze. Between media coverage, the team parade, and dozens of interviews, I was surprised he even found time to see me. But he did. Every single day he made time for me. There were no grand gestures or attempts to move things along, either. He just showed me every day that he'd be there for me. How could a girl not fall the rest of the way when she knows she can count on the man she adores to catch her when she does? The buzzer sounded right on time at 3 o'clock. I'd asked Brody if he would mind doing a short interview this afternoon down at the station. He'd said yes without hesitation, even though I knew he was pretty much at his limit of cameras in his face. I also knew that he wouldn't listen to me when I told him to text me when he got to my apartment.
He always came up. I wasn't sure if it was him being a gentleman or him hoping I would have a moment of weakness, and he wouldn't have to be a gentleman anymore. Knowing Brody, it was 50-50. I opened the door, and there stood the most delicious man I'd ever laid eyes on. He had on a navy wool peacoat with a navy and light green plaid scarf that brought out the golden specks in his green eyes. The morning after the Super Bowl, he'd called me, saying he had to drag his ass out of bed to shave before the day full of interviews. I'd mentioned I liked him better with a few days of scrub. Since then, I noticed scrub had become a permanent fixture. "You running late?"
"No, you're early."
I was wrapped in a fuzzy bathrobe and had my hair up in a ponytail. He looked at his watch. "You said 3.
"No, I said 4.
I took a play from his book. Did he really think I would believe I constantly got the pickup time wrong? He thought he needed to be sly to spend an extra hour in my apartment. But today, I was the one being sly. I rolled my eyes and stepped aside. "You seriously have an issue with time."
"I could swear you said 3.
"That's because I did."
"Well, you know the drill. Make yourself comfortable. I'm just going to take a quick shower."
I disappeared into the bathroom, and my quick shower turned into a marathon grooming session. I shaved every last hair from the waist down, except for a thin line between my legs. Afterward, I rubbed moisturizer on the entire surface of my body and brushed out my damp hair. Initially, I thought I would traipse into the living room buck naked, and he would figure the rest out. But I decided to do things Brody style. I wrapped a plush, dry towel around my body and prepared to cross a line there would be no coming back from.
"Change of plans!"
I yelled from the bedroom as I primped myself in the full-length mirror.
"Would you mind if we did the interview here?"
"Sure. Whatever you want."
Brody was watching TV, his back to me, when I walked into the room. I took a deep breath, rounded the couch, and stood in front of him. He was slouched down, but perked up the minute he saw me standing wrapped in a towel.
"Think I can ask you a few questions, Mr. Easton?"
I spoke into my hairbrush. He furrowed his brow but played along.
"How does it feel to be a 2-time Super Bowl MVP?
"It feels pretty damn good. But I've been asked that question about 1,000 times, Ms. Maddox. Don't you have any original questions?"
The first time he'd asked me that, I wanted to kick his ass. This time, I loved that he remembered our early encounter. I arched an eyebrow.
"I do have an original question, actually."
Nonchalantly, I reached up and tugged at the knot of the towel wrapped around my body. It fell to the floor.
"If I told you I loved you more than anything in this world, would you give me another chance?"
Brody stood. His response was serious, and he spoke directly into my eyes.
"I'd give you every fucking chance I own to be with you again."
We collided, closing the distance between us. Brody kissed me long and hard, wrapping his thick arms so tight around me, it was hard to breathe. But nothing had ever felt better. He lifted me up into the air and cradled me against his chest. Before I realized what he was doing, he was carrying me into the bedroom.
"I hope that's the only interview I really have to do. Please tell me we don't have to go to your office to do another one."
"The only thing you have to do for the next few days is me."
He set me down next to the bed and began stripping out of his clothes. He shook his head as his eyes caressed my body.
"So you finally admit you love me, but I can't make love to you yet."
"Why not?
because I need to fuck you hard and come inside you in a way that makes me feel like an animal right now.
I want that, too. God, I want that, too.
He lifted me, guiding my legs to wrap around his waist, and turned us toward the wall. We'll save the bed for making love, but I'm going to take you up against that wall right now.
He kissed me until my lips bruised, and I gasped for air. The restraint he had been clinging to finally snapped, and the way he stared at me like I was his next meal was the most raw and sexually arousing thing I ever saw in my life. My back securely pinned against the wall, Brody's hand slid from my ass to my opening, and he dipped two fingers inside.
Jesus, you're soaked.
He gripped my hips and thrust inside of me. My eyes fluttered closed. It felt so good to be filled by him. So right.
Delilah, open your eyes.
He pumped into me harder as his gaze held mine.
Tell me. Tell me again.
I love you.
He whispered over my mouth. Again.
My body began to build toward climax. My breathing became more labored, and my words turned hoarse. I love you, Brody Easton. I do.
He told me he loved me over and over again as he thrust deeper and deeper. I fucking love you, he groaned as he came inside of me.
We stayed up against that wall for a long time with our foreheads pressed together. A moment of utter clarity struck me as we looked into each other's eyes, our chests rising and falling in unison. For the last 7 years, I had been searching for peace. I had thought peace was a place where there was no turbulence or fear, where there were no highs and lows, and where happiness was found in the calm at the center. But at that moment, I finally realized peace wasn't about avoiding things. It was about making the choice to live life with all its chaos around you, and in the midst of it all, having calm in your heart. Brody Easton, the man who'd entered my life like a storm, had turned out to be my calm. How was that for irony? Delilah. Epilogue. I left the house while Brody was still sleeping so I could sneak in a doctor's appointment before heading to the office. I hadn't expected them to do a sonogram today. My blood sugar had been a little high with my first pregnancy, so they were keeping a close watch. Brody was a nervous wreck about anything that could indicate a problem for the baby or me, so I'd stopped in for my urine test alone so as not to cause him stress on today of all days. It was our anniversary. Or anniversaries, to be exact.
Your sugar looks good, Delilah. Since you're here, why don't we also do a quick sonogram? Check your fluid level.
That was new with this pregnancy. Oligohydramnios, low levels of amniotic fluid. Mine wasn't a cause for alarm, but just like my glucose levels, the doctor wanted to keep an eye on it.
Sure.
I felt bad for having a sonogram without Brody. The man teared up every time he looked at the screen, even when it was early, and the fetus only looked like a big old tadpole. I changed into a gown, and the doctor came into the testing room. After squirting cold gel across my growing belly, he began to swirl his magic wand around. I heard the strong heartbeat the minute he switched on the sound. After a few minutes, the doctor told me the fluid level had increased, and everything looked good so far. He focused on one area in particular.
Do you want to know the sex today?
Really? I thought it was too early.
Sometimes it is. But this little one isn't shy and is exposing itself to me right at this moment.
I'd only worked part-time since our baby was born last year. 2 days a week, kept my foot in the door, and also gave me an excuse to travel with my husband for away games. I patted my belly. Things would get more difficult once this little one arrived.
Stop feeling yourself up!
Indy planted herself in the guest chair in my office and turned the tape dispenser toward her. She unrolled a long strip of tape and stuck it to her face from ear to ear, pushing up her nose to resemble a pig's. That's attractive. A few minutes later, Mr. Com walked in and did a double take at Indy's face. She just smiled like there was nothing wrong. It made him flustered.
Preseason starts next week. Can I count on you to get that husband of yours in for an interview?
There was nothing the man denied me.
I'll see if he's up for it.
When Mr. Cum disappeared, Indy raised an eyebrow.
If he's up for it? That man would eat shit for you. Literally.
Such a lovely analogy. I began to pack up my desk. I can't let Mr. Cum think my job is that easy now, can I? Indy's phone buzzed, and her face lit up. I knew who it was without having to ask. A few months ago, she'd met her own baller at the barbecue Brody and I had thrown at our new home in Larchmont. The two of them had been inseparable ever since. It meant I got to spend more time with Indy, which I loved. They had even joined us upstate for the weekend 2 weeks ago at our newly finished cabin. She looked up from her phone.
You leaving early?
Not early. On time for a change.
What would possess you to do that? Having a studly husband at home with a baby and carrying around a second one yourself?
She puffed at me with a smile.
You have your priorities all screwed up.
I have to stop and pick up something for Brody for our anniversaries on the way home, too.
You two really sticking to the traditional present crap?
We'd been married on the anniversary of the day we met, so we had two things to celebrate each year.
Yep.
The first year is paper. Second is cotton.
Sounds horrible. What did Brody get you? Cotton maternity bloomers and a napkin?
I laughed. No idea. We haven't exchanged gifts yet. On the way home, I stopped at the store to pick up a last-minute gift. I had written Brody a love letter and bought him a cotton shirt that I thought would bring out the color of his eyes. But there had been a change of plans since this morning. The house was unusually quiet when I walked in. Only Tank, our ridiculously large Neapolitan Mastiff, came to greet me at the door.
All right, boy.
He wagged his tail, and I had to catch the small table near the door he almost knocked over.
Calm down! Where are the crazy man and your sister?
Dropping my leather laptop case and bag on the floor in the entryway, I slipped off my shoes and headed into the kitchen. It was empty, but there were three yellow sticky notes on the fridge and a small box on the island counter. Phrase. The first note read in big letters. My husband had taken to watching game shows during the day in the off-season. The second note read, Hint, since you suck at games, what you are to me. Underneath, on a separate sticky note, he had drawn an arrow, and below it read,
Go to the couch already.
Smiling, I walked to the living room. Brody had piled all the throw pillows on the tufted ottoman. I picked up each one and laid them out on the rug. D was embroidered in script on a red throw pillow. I used to have a matching M, too, for Maddox, but Brody had thrown that out and replaced it with the next pillow the week after we got married. E. M. This was one I'd never seen before. A new addition to our hodgepodge collection. It was a soft pink pillow, stuffed with, of course, traditional anniversary cotton, and monogrammed with our daughter's first initial. Y. Another new addition. Fluffy, pink, and embroidered to match the new M. Both of our mother's names were Yvonne, which was why we had picked it for our daughter's middle name. B. For Brody. I had added the red embroidered pillow when we moved in together. Love. The rectangular brown pillow Drew had given to me when we were just teenagers. The pillow was tattered and patched, and even though it reminded me of him, it also served as a daily reminder of the incredible man I'd married. After Brody and I moved in together, I'd tucked the pillow away in the closet. It felt odd to display a gift another man had given me. One day I came home and found it on the couch. When Brody found me looking at it, he'd wrapped his arms around my waist and told me Drew had helped make me into the woman he fell in love with, and that the pillow didn't have to hide. D-E-M-Y-B love. I rearranged each pillow to spell out the message Brody had left me until I solved the puzzle. My beloved. I seriously had the best husband in the world. The first time he told me that any man who bought me roses wasn't worth my time because I deserved something unique, I thought he was being verbose. But the man had backed up all of his words with actions since the day I met him. His gifts had always been as thoughtful and unique as he was. If it was even possible, my heart swelled a little more in my chest as I set out to find my family upstairs. When I arrived at our bedroom door, I heard Brody talking to the baby. He hadn't heard me come up. I stepped back from the doorway and listened to him changing his daughter's diaper. "You stink, you know, baby girl. Your mother, she always smells amazing. That's probably why you're going to have a little sister or brother barely a year younger than you." I covered my mouth to stifle my giggle. "What's with this powder? I can never get this stuff to come out." I heard him smack the plastic bottle a few times and then, shit. I pictured him fanning away a plume of white talc. The tearing of the plastic tape sounded on one side and then the other. Marlene giggled. "What do you think is so funny, huh? You're the one with no teeth." The rocking chair creaked, and I knew he had sat with her on his lap. The two of them spent a lot of quality time in that chair lately. He liked to tell our daughter crazy stories when he thought no one was listening. "You know, you look a lot like the lady you were named after with those big pink gums." "Da, da, da." Of course, she hadn't learned mama yet. My daughter was definitely a daddy's girl. Brody started telling the baby some story about her namesake accidentally dropping her teeth down the garbage disposal, and I let the two of them have their time together and snuck back down the stairs. A little while later, Brody came down. His black shirt was half white with talcum powder. He pulled me into a kiss, then leaned down and kissed my belly. "Marlene just went down early. How long have you been home?" I wrapped my arms around his neck. "Long enough to solve my Wheel of Fortune puzzle. I love it. Thank you. Do I win a prize?"
"A big one. I'll give you that later." He winked. "Did you open your box?"
"I didn't, actually. I wanted to give you your present first." I walked over to the bag I had left by the doorway and pulled out a simple white box wrapped with a red bow.
"I took the baby to the park half the day so she would pass out early."
He shook the box.
"I'm hoping there's a sexy teddy for you in here."
"It would have to be a maternity teddy at this point." My belly was definitely bigger earlier this time around. I rubbed at my bump. "I don't think maternity and sexy cotton teddy go together very well."
"You're nuts. I think you look hot as shit this way. Extra curves."
His hands cupped into the universal gesture for large boobs. "Extra tits.
I might keep you knocked up for years."
I smacked at his abs. Hard as a rock. I really was one lucky woman. "Open my present, perv." Brody slipped off the bow and opened the box. He scratched his chin, then picked up the brown leather mitt.
You do know this is a baseball glove, right? I play football.
Wise ass. I took the ball out of the box and handed it to him. The center of the ball is made of cotton for our 2-year anniversary.
Oh, thanks, babe.
He leaned over to kiss me, but I put my hand on his chest and stopped him. Try the glove on. He pouted at my rejection, but did as I asked. Slipping his fingers inside, he found my second present. After he had removed the rolled-up papers from the glove, he went to toss them on the table.
Those aren't stuffing.
That's your 1-year paper anniversary present. Brody's forehead crinkled as he unrolled the first of a series of sonogram prints. He looked down at the picture and then back up at me.
What's this?
I had to stop in to do a urine test at the OB today, just to check my blood sugar. My count was normal, but the doctor did a sonogram to check my fluid level.
Everything okay?
Yep. But take a closer look at the picture. He held them up to his face.
Is that
a penis? Brody's eyes flared. He would never admit he wanted this baby to be a boy. In all honesty, he would be perfectly happy with a house full of healthy girls, but if he could pick the sex... He surprised me by lifting me up and spinning me around.
A cock! My baby's got a cock!
I laughed. That's one way of putting it. When he finally put me down, he spoke to my stomach.
Did you hear that, kid? You're going to be a man.
I think he's going to be a boy first. My crazy husband picked me back up and spun me around again, this time yelling,
"A boy! We're going to have a boy! A boy! We're going to have a boy!"
I laughed. When he put me down, he opened the sliding doors that led to the yard and screamed to whoever might hear him,
"A boy! It's a damn boy!"
He was so loud, the whole neighborhood probably knew now. I loved that I could give him this gift. We were so blessed. There wasn't much more to ask for in life. We had found true love, had a healthy baby girl and a boy on the way, had friends we adored and jobs we loved. We were happy beyond our wildest dreams, dreams that weren't even imaginable for either of us only 5 years ago. When Brody stopped yelling, he walked to me and cupped my face in his hands, speaking softly.
"I love you, Delilah Easton."
"How come you're whispering now?" I teased. "Don't you want the whole world to hear how much you love me?" He kissed my lips.
"Didn't you hear? I just told them."
This concludes The Baller by V. Keeland. Narrated by Mackenzie Cartwright and Sean Crisden. Copyright 2016 by V. Keeland. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with V. Keeland, care of the Rebecca Friedman Literary Agency, and was produced in the year 2016 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks and to take advantage of special offers.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.